Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 49 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Today, we're going to be talking about a real topical theme, and that's cervical cancer death. What's going on here, especially the racial gap? This is a huge topic here, and it's hit all the headlines. Before we get into this episode, I want to make sure you know that this entire episode of Her is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They are delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized just for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please run on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate this podcast and review us. Yeah, I read these things and I really welcome your thoughts. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Cervical cancer death. Well, I can't imagine a better person to help us out than our expert, Dr. Tara Ullman, who's a board-certified gynecologist in New York City, an NAMS-certified menopause practitioner, and author of the new book, Menopause Confidential, A Doctor Reveals the Secrets to Thriving Through Midlife. Tara, welcome to Her once again.
Great to be back, Sam.
All right, so the death rate from cervical cancer in the United States is considerably higher than previously estimated, and the disparity in death rates between black women and white women is significantly wider, according to a study published Monday, well, actually, it was a couple weeks ago, in the journal Cancer. And this was kind of a huge headline grabber. Tell us a lot more about this study, Tara. What was really going on?
Well, I want all your listeners, first of all, to take a collective deep breath, because cervical cancer, while it used to be the number one killer of women in the United States in the early 1900s, is really not that big of a player anymore, despite what you just heard in the headlines. And you just heard about it in the headlines, not only because of this study talking about some racial differences, black and Hispanic women versus white women, and the risk of dying from cancer of the cervix, but also there was a celebrity who made a statement recently that she was somehow recently diagnosed with cervical cancer. And so everything kind of came to the forefront about a week ago, as you said. So I think the best approach is to help women understand how do you get cervical cancer and how do you prevent cervical cancer and what are the real numbers, so we all don't have to worry and wonder and be afraid. And the real numbers are the following. Yeah, let's do that. About 13,000 women will get diagnosed with cancer of the cervix every year, and about 4,000 of those women will die from cervical cancer. And there seems to be a bias or a difference in who those women are, and they are more likely to be black and Hispanic women. And the reason for that is because black and Hispanic women, for whatever reason, are less likely to get their screening done. And now we're going to talk about why we're even bothering doing pap smears and why the guidelines have changed and what women really need to know so that they can feel confident and calm about this latest controversy that they're hearing about. Shall we get started?
Well, you know, I'm thinking that a piece of this is a bit of a kind of a keen grasp of the obvious, and that is that so many of these women may not have access to appropriate health care and preventive care. So I think access is a huge piece of the action, just in terms of technically getting to where you need to go. The second is lack of education. they don't, you know, they're probably blowing it off because in deference to caregiving the 300 people in their life, and they just don't see this as a huge thing. I think there's a lot more play out there in the media about breast cancer and getting those mammograms and all the rest of it. But when it comes to the pap smears and the rest of it, it's sort of fallen by the wayside somewhat. And clearly, another factor, because there's so many factors, as you brought up, is, you know, insurance and who's paying for this. And when I talk about access technically, I'm also talking about access payment-wise, because someone's got to pay for all of this. Do you agree?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I want all your listeners, whether they're Black or Hispanic or white or anything at all, all women have the same cervix. So there's nothing extra special about a white woman's cervix or a Black woman's cervix. And it really is a matter of getting screening at the appropriate time and follow-up when follow-up is needed. And we should really just start from the beginning. The reason why we get pap smears, we used to teach women to get pap smears every year, but those guidelines changed in 2013. So this is a very timely show that you're doing so we can educate women about the new guidelines while we're at it. But we're looking for cervical cancer. That's what we're doing when we're doing pap smears. And we're looking for cervical precancer. And the whole thing gets started because women are exposed to the human papillomavirus. Now, we have all met the human papillomavirus if we have been sexually active with more than three partners. And most of us have cleared that virus over time. So that is the cause of cervical cancer and cervical precancer, this sexually transmitted disease, the human papillomavirus. And there are some high-risk strains that women may have heard about, HPV 16 and 18, but there are other high-risk strains as well. And that basically, you know, I was just thinking about just this minute that we should also make sure that anybody listening to your show, Pam, who has a daughter or a son somewhere between the ages of 10 and before sexual activity should consider getting the HPV vaccination to help protect them. But back to the HPV infection, if you are exposed to that virus, and most of us have been, most of us will clear the virus. Some of us will not clear the virus, and it will show up as an infection on our cervix. That infection will usually be caught during a pap smear, and it won't lead to much of anything. And for very few women, that infection can progress to changes to the cells on the cervix, precancerous changes. And then over many years, those precancerous changes on the cervix can become cervical cancer. I want your listeners to know that the process is very, very slow. So even though we have taught women that they need their pap smears every year, the guidelines changed in 2013 for a good reason. We were over-papping women, and since it takes many years from exposure to the HPV virus to a potential infection on the cervix to precancerous changes on the cervix to possibly cervical cancer 10 years down the line, the guidelines have changed for women to have their pap smears and HPV testing every 3 to 5 years. But this brings us back to the headlines about, is there something different about Black and Hispanic women? Absolutely not. Their cervixes are the same as everybody else's. It's just a matter of, are they getting their pap smear and HPV testing every 3 to 5 years? And if there's an abnormality, is it getting appropriately followed up?
Yeah, you know, and I completely concur. The issue of the vaccine is rather interesting too. Talking about prevention in the first place, I've seen, and I know everyone out there in her podcast land has seen a lot of the commercials that have now come up showing a child looking into the camera who's now been diagnosed with cancer. Saying, why didn't you do this, Mom? Why didn't you consider this, Dad? And it showed a young man and a young woman. And I thought that that was extremely provocative. And certainly, hopefully, we'll get parents having a longer conversation with their kids' doctors and to figure out what the game plan is here. I think a lot of parents, too, just don't want to know that their kids are sexually active. I think that they're kind of in denial
about that. The word vaccination makes many parents frightened. You know, will there be some issue if I vaccinate my child against the flu or the measles or anything? And when it comes to the issue of vaccinating against and protecting against the human papillomavirus, I think it's a whole other ballgame. And it's a new conversation, as you say, for parents. But if women who are listening to your show today are in any way concerned about cervical cancer, again, I want to bring that concern down to a reasonable conversation. Most of us will not get cancer of the cervix. Most of us are following the appropriate guidelines. Many of us are being over-papped, by the way, and over-screened. So the issue really is make sure that you go for your pap smear and HPV testing every 3 to 5 years. And as long as you're normal, that's the recommendation by every expert society in this country. And, you know, interestingly, when you get to be a 65-year-old girl, you get to graduate from the need for pap smear.
Well, see, now I was going to ask you about that because it's very interesting. There's the guidelines suggest that screening ends at age 65 for women who've had 2 or 3 consecutive negative results in the previous decade. And then the study says that the greatest mortality rates hit Black women 85 and older.
Yes, let's clear that up for your listeners because
that kind of
information makes everyone so fearful that at any minute they're going to get cancer of the cervix. It's practically impossible. Nothing's impossible, but it's practically impossible to get cancer of the cervix in the face of normal and pap testing. And guidelines were there to be very protective of women. So overscreening is a bad idea. We harm women when we screen more than we need to. When it comes to that statistic about the, you know, 80-something Black woman with cervical cancer, what's happened in that situation is that woman did not have normal screening all the way. So you don't get to graduate at the age of 65 unless you have been basically normal for at least the 10 years prior to that. And I do say to women that even if you don't need a pap smear as you get older, you do need your gynecologist to still go up in your business and look about to make sure that you don't have a cervicitis, an infection on your cervix. So the gynecologist can see this. So in the case of that one statistic, it would be extraordinary for that person to have had normal testing and then show up with a cancer of the cervix that nobody knew about. So to me, it says that she did not go in for her screening and she did not go in for follow-up. So, you know, a lot of women just decide not to see the gynecologist after a certain age. So once they're done making babies, they pretty much think they're done, you know, with those kinds of visits. So you still need to see the gynecologist even after the age of 65, but the chances of you getting cancer of the cervix are minuscule in the face of all your normal testing.
One of my patients asked me this question, and that is because young people are so much more likely to be sexually active earlier and have many partners because it's a new day, new culture, new normal, etc. Does that at all, would you think? Is there any information about that hastening the development of cervical cancer in younger, much more sexually active people?
No, as a matter of fact, the disease still progresses very slowly over the course of years, but it did change the guidelines, by the way. We used to teach women that they had to have their first GYN exam and pap smear at the age of 18. But it has officially been pushed back to the age of 21. That is when you first get your first pap smear. For all your listeners who have daughters, and I'm always asked that question, when should I bring my daughter to the gynecologist? Well, she doesn't get her pap smear at least until the age of 21. Because we do expect all of these sexually active tweenagers and teenagers to be exposed to the HPV virus, and they will have changes, and most of them will clear the virus and clear the changes by themselves with their own immune system. So we don't want to overtest this sexually active population and find stuff that will just go away over time. So we start pap testing at the age of 21. That's a new recommendation since 2013. And we don't do HPV testing in young women until they're over the age of 30 because it's so prevalent. HPV is all over the place. That's what I tell women. You really can't escape it, even if you're using a condom. There's HPV on the scrotum, and so that you can't put a condom on the scrotum. So you want to do your very best in terms of protecting against sexually transmitted diseases. And if, again, all mothers listening, if you have a child starting at the age of 10 who is not yet sexually active, be brave and have a conversation with your pediatrician about the HPV vaccination. It's very easy to do. It's a two-timer. It's one needle, and then 6 months later, the second part of that vaccination. And then you have protected your children from the inevitable exposure that they will have to the HPV vaccination, which will ultimately translate into less cervical cancer death down the line. So I hope at the end of this talk together that your listeners will take home that they don't personally have to be fearful, whether they are Black, Hispanic, white, or whatever color they are. They just have to go for their routine screening every 3 to 5 years. And if they're normal, they follow that path. And if they're not normal, they follow the recommendations of their healthcare professional. And if they have children, they should absolutely consider this vaccination. I have not seen a single patient have an interesting or adverse reaction to the vaccination. I know, again, parents are always frightened of the word vaccination, but in this particular case, I have not had a patient have an adverse reaction. And you're doing a great thing to protect your kids. So,
let me ask you a very timely question that kind of segues off this. And I wondered about, I've actually looked into this a bit and have had patients who've had issues with this. Gay women oftentimes are not getting the kind of gynecologic preventive care that they should. And in my reading and in studies that people are beginning to do, really exploring why, one of the first things that happens, and it's happened in the past, is that, there was a difficulty between patient and doctor, because oftentimes doctors were not educated about gay culture and what goes on, and therefore oftentimes were judgmental or whatever. I think personally that, flash forward today, one would hope to heaven that that's improved, but it didn't make for a very welcome environment. So I think that's one thing. Two, a lot of gay women say, well, I'm not having sexual intercourse with a guy, so who cares anyway? So let me throw that up to you. What do you think?
Yes, let's educate all of your gay listeners. So gay women are just the same as straight women. They have to have the same kind of screening. And as all gay women know, many times you may have experimented earlier in your youth with a male partner. Right. So you are, gay women can transmit the HPV virus to each other. It is the virus that is responsible for genital warts. So if you have warts on the vagina or the vulva and you have sexual relationship with another person, male or female, you can get that same virus transmitted. So it doesn't matter if you're gay or straight, you still have the same risks as everybody else and need the same screening as everybody else. And I think, or I hope at least in this day and age, the gay women and gay young women feel much more comfortable talking about whatever issues that they're experiencing. This is, I hope, a new age where we can all talk openly and comfortably about whatever our own individual issues are.
Well, I wish, I hope to heaven physicians out there are listening, and also patients should, if they don't have a physician that's really working it for them, then change. That's what I have to say. I mean, you know, you've got to be able to have a supportive environment, a welcoming environment for you to be able to take optimal care of yourself. And I know that you, Tara, and I are right on the same page with that. And I've actually talked to many gay women who are older who went through an era where, you know, there was a tremendous amount of judgment. So the lesson here is simple. You still have to make sure to basically take good care of yourself despite all and make this work one way or the other, and get those pap smears, abide by the guidelines, and work with your whole medical crew, whether it's a nurse practitioner, physician, whomever, to be able to achieve that optimal care, because you deserve that. And, you know, I know you do the same thing, Tara. I just tell my patients, you're your own advocates. You got to step it up, ask questions, be assertive, do your homework, you know, keep track, be accountable so that you can make sure to optimize your own health care. Long gone are the days when it was a top-down situation where physicians told patients which way is up. Now it's like it's a team effort, and you got to work for yourself, too. I know you do that, too, right, Tara?
I absolutely do. You know, I want to leave your listeners, especially your listeners over the age of 40, with a fun clinical pearl. As you know, I have I call it my masterpiece. Menopause Confidential is for every woman over the age of 40. And I have a chapter called The Latest Rap About the Pap. And so when you're reading this book on everything that you need to know from head to toe for everyone over the age of 40, you'll also read all about how did we even come to learn about the HPV virus, and why do we do pap smears, and what are the guidelines? And I think I wrap it all up in about 4 or 5 pages. So for all of you out there who are still confused, please read The Latest Rap About the Pap.
I love it. And by the way, the book is absolutely fabulous. I cannot begin to tell you how many people I've referred to this book, because, you know, it's a confusing craziness out there when you're going through, as it were, midlife, kind of a code for, oh my gosh, I'm perimenopausal and menopausal here. And it's so wonderful to have a physician with your background, Tara, to be able to make it simple, digestible. So I want to make sure everyone out there knows the name of the book is Menopause Confidential. And the website is Dr. Allmen, that's ALLMEN.com, to learn more about Dr. Tara Allman's marvelous work and her advocacy on behalf of everyone out there who is going through this type of wonderful, shall we say, journey in life. Right, Tara?
I think it's the best
all right,
time. It's the best time.
Well, it is absolutely the best time, but you have to work it to make it the best time. Tara, thank you so much for being on the Her Podcast once again.
It's my pleasure.
All right, thanks, everyone out there. Remember, I want you to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds and rate this podcast on iTunes. That's because we want to attract more people just like you to the show. And that happens when you take the time to rate it. And also, leave a review. Come on now. This is what I read in my spare time. Spare time? Yeah, I do have a little bit of that. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. And you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.